From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. New Hanover County's Board of Commissioners has 5 seats. Each member is elected to a staggered 4-year term. In 2020, there are 3 open seats. 2 of the incumbents, Patricia Cusack and Woody White, have chosen not to run again. The 3rd incumbent, Jonathan Barfield, is seeking re-election. We heard from him last week in part 1, along with candidates Deb Hayes and Bill Rivenbark. You can find that episode at WHQR.org. Today, we meet the remaining 3 candidates. Up first, Skip Watkins. He's lived in southeastern North Carolina all of his life. He met his wife in college at UNCW. 36 years later, they have 2 grown children. Skip Watkins is an independent financial advisor with Capital Investment Companies, and he teaches economics for the University of Mount Olive part-time. He's worked with Cape Fear Fair and Expo for more than 30 years and has served as manager for more than 25 of those years. He and his wife have also volunteered for the Azalea Festival for over 3 decades. Skip Watkins was elected to the New Hanover County Board of Commissioners in 2014. When he ran for re-election in 2018, he lost by a very slim margin, slightly more than 1 percentage point. 2 years later, he is back in the ring, and he joins me now. Skip Watkins, welcome to Coastline.
Good morning, Rachel. I miss being in the studio with you, but I appreciate you guys bringing us in via Zoom.
We're glad that we can do it this way. Now, let's talk about why you're running again. We know it's common in local races to see an election won or lost by a fraction of a percentage point, in your case, just over 1 point. How do you think about that now? What did you make any mistakes? Was it the luck of the draw, the mood of the voters? What happened?
I really believe it's like your ladder, the mood of the voters. You know, if you stop and look at it on the local level, I was not reelected. Michael Lee was not reelected by a very, very slimmer margin than me. In Washington, D.C., the Republicans lost the House of Representatives. And in Raleigh, you know, the Republicans lost supermajority. So I think it was just a sign of the times, a function of the times, but things are changing. We have polls to say things are changing.
Why do you want to run again? Why do you want to serve another 4 years? It's a big job.
It is. As one of our earlier conversations, you know, you and I had spoken that I was only going to serve a short period of time. Well, unfortunately, 4 years was too short for me. So when Patricia Cusack, Commissioner Cusack, Vice Chairman Cusack, said that she wasn't going to run again, I wished her well. She and I spoke about it. It was a personal choice and decision. And then when Commissioner Woody White chose not to run, my phone went off the hook. It was like, you got to run. And so with, I'm still abreast of all the issues. Most every issue that's facing the commission right now, Rachel, was in place or put in place. In fact, a couple of things I actually did, they're coming to fruition now. But
give us an example of one of those issues.
Yeah, well, the stormwater program that was originally started back in my tenure, I used to stand in people's front yards. I've done it in the Ogden area. I've done it in Castle Hayne. I've stood there in my rain boots up to my knees. I have 2 pair. One black one is really tall, and the short ones are like fishing boots, and they weren't deep enough. So I went with county staff, had some meetings, found out the real issues were basically storm debris that built up over the decades. Went to my fellow commissioners. They supported it. And without going into naming names, I actually recently spoke to a county staff member. He said, Skip, you championed this. And, everybody's got a storm issue, stormwater issue problem. We have hurricanes. In the city, they have a program. In the county, they did not until recently. And if you and I were neighbors, we had to keep our ditch clean in the unincorporated area. And people just couldn't do it. So now that program, I'm very proud to say, July 1 of this year, this fiscal year, was kicked in. And it's going to take a little bit of time, but it's going to solve a huge amount of problems. And another one, which I'll make it brief, Commissioner Cusick and White and I spearheaded the first tax decrease, property tax decrease in decades. And the recent commission recently initiated the new budget under that tax rate. And every year, including this year, when this year's over, we'll save $40 million for the county citizens, $10 million per year. And that stays in people's pockets, yet we still fully funded schools, public safety, et cetera.
Now, one of the major issues facing the current board is defining the terms of the sale of New Hanover Regional Medical Center to Novant. Also, within that is defining the power structures, how appointments are made to the board of a community foundation that will be responsible for overseeing a large pot of money. If you could define some of those terms, if you could define that agreement, what would you want to see put in place?
Very succinctly, I understand that $50 million going for mental health, which will include, you know, opioid crisis is still with us. Over 58 million people a year die, more than Vietnam the whole time. We still lose those people. And if that $50 million, you know, that's a lot of money, but is it really a lot? Is it enough? We'll see. But this no longer top fold because of picking issues going on today, COVID or other issues in our society, but it's still there. So I've got no problem with that 50. $300 million is currently earmarked or thought to be going to the hospital, $100 million for transition, $200 million to stabilize the employees of the hospital and their pension. I have not had access to be able to put pen to paper to those numbers myself. If reelected, I will do that. I'm totally in favor of the employees of the hospital, and I just want to make sure if it's $300 million, okay. If it's more, if it's less, you know. So we'll figure that out. $300 million is going to the county supposedly for an emergency fund to kind of offset future hurricanes or natural disasters, kind of an emergency fund. I still have not put pen to paper on that number either. The remaining 1.25 is publicly been said going to a community foundation. And at one point it was going to be, we had heard in the public, because I don't know anything more than anybody else. I'm the regular citizen like everybody else, but I pay a lot of attention and I listen to everybody's comments that I can get my hands on. The 1.25 was going to go to the community foundation. And originally six were going to be appointed by the hospital trustees. And some people in the community are worried that because that trustee board initially not, but ultimately may be controlled by Novant to some degree, should that be the case. And then the other five, it could be a total of 11, the other five appointed by the commission. And then there were scuttlebutt about the commission holding all 11 appointments. And the local government commission basically came in, and they've been here a long time, ever since the Great Depression, because North Carolina was the number two default state in the nation on road bonds. That's another story for another day. The local government commission basically said, if the county commission appoints all 11, they are going to control the money, local government commission. So that $1.25 billion, I'm a financial advisor, you know, and I don't like to use the word interest because really you should say growth. But I'm going to say if that $1.25, if we lived off the growth of that money, we'd have about $40 to $50 million a year to do the wonderful work that the citizens of New Hanover County deserve. And there's been some issues about K-12 or where to put that money. I'm not in favor of boilerplating all of that money. I think there'll be issues once in a while that need to be addressed.
So are you saying, Skip Watkins, that you think this foundation board needs to be set up in such a way so that it is not under the control or the oversight of the local government commission?
Yes, that is correct. It's more accessible. It's not accessible because the money will be removed from the commission's grasp and I will be adamant about that, whether I'm a commissioner or not. I ain't going away on that issue, but we could live off of that $40, $50 million a year and do wonderful things. There's no other county in this nation that I think of that has anything similar. We'd have that's wonderful, but it's got to be protected. And I hopefully will be sitting on that commission. I do not want that commission or any commission to have the power to control that money. I just don't trust five people in political environments, whether you're left side, right side, pick a side, in the middle, don't trust it. So I think the broader diversification of the board will preserve the integrity of the appointments of the community foundation members, and then ultimately that money will be safer.
Scientists tell us Climate change is impacting the Cape Fear region, most obviously in the form of more frequent and more serious flooding from the Cape Fear River. And you've talked about how in the first term that you served from 2014 to 18, you thought it was important to initiate the stormwater management program for the entire county. Do you believe that there's more to do on the flooding front or planning for climate change? Do local governments need to develop a plan?
Well, I really do believe that the current plan we have in place is the most feasible, because a lot of people don't realize, Rachel, the budget was like just under $400 million, $399 million for the county. And a lot of that stuff is boilerplated. Education, which is one of my number one issues, public health, Department of Health and Human Services, whatever, that combined group now, I don't remember the name, the sheriff's office, other administrations of the county. So there's only like 3 or 4% of that, which is still 15, 16 million, but it's just not, the budget is an extension of state government. It's just not willy nilly. Let's get a 3 or 4 million here. So I'd like to see this stormwater program initiated as soon as possible. And it's going to take a little bit of time. As far as other things the county can do, I would just encourage our citizens to do whatever they can do. Government cannot be the solution to every answer. So if you've got a drainage ditch and you're in an unincorporated area, or in the city for that matter, even though you pay a fee, I live in city limits, clean it out. Get a chainsaw. Have a chainsaw party. Invite your friends over, cook some hot dogs. But things like that. We could be also aware of how we deal with things like pet waste and things like that. And don't pour gasoline on a fire ant hill or anything like that. There's other things we can do. But at the county level, and if you ask about the global warming issue, whether it's man-made or whether it's cyclical, which we have arguments on both sides, we can always, each and every one of us can always do better.
What do you think about changing the name of Hugh McRae Park to Longleaf Park? Would you have voted for that change had you been on the county commission at the time?
I don't know. I do believe that, one of the things, issues, someone asked me recently what I thought the number one issues were or was in the county. And I mentioned opioid. I mentioned all the, because typically, quite frankly, Rachel, every year, every major issue are still the same issues from when I was elected in 14, when I ran in 18, and when I'm running in 20. But we've recently had a culturally with the racial inequities. And I am very sensitive. I almost got in trouble one time. I told people, I don't have any friends of color. I don't have any black friends, don't have any brown friends, don't have any Jewish friends, I don't have any Native American friends. I just have friends. I don't demographically separate my friends because I just love them for who they are. But looking back, I have had an opportunity to speak to many of those folks and have asked their permission to have an honest conversation with them. And so until we can have a dialogue, a bilateral or multilateral dialogue, Rachel, we're not going to get a solution to this issue of Black Lives Matter. Do all lives matter? Do we have to hyphenate? Or are we Americans, or are we a demographic American? So as for answering about changing the name of Hugh McRae Park, I wasn't there. I really don't know how I would have voted. I'm being honest. I was ambivalent on that.
How do you think the county's Board of Education is doing? Some have described them as a tad dysfunctional. How are they functioning in your view? And if you were elected to the county board, what role could you play in influencing the way that body functions?
Well, I'll address the second question first. When I was a commissioner, I had the fortunate opportunity to meet every once a month, two commissioners, because you can't get three of, minority of the board. So the minority of the commission and the minority of the school board would get together for breakfast. And we talk about things, and some people talk about backroom deals and all that mess. Look, I don't care if you're on a nonprofit. I don't care if you're for-profit. I don't care if you're county government. People have conversations. So come on, be real. Don't be naive and don't try to make headlines just because you want to throw something against the wall and see if it sticks. So we were, we'd have conversations. What do you need? What are you looking for? And we disagree on things. But when it came down to the budget, which is what commission can control for the school board, we were in sync. We increased every year I was on the commission. We increased the per student funding. people may not realize this, but the commission also, or the county, citizens, taxpayers, fund about 15 to 20%. I don't remember the exact number, 15 to 20% of the teacher's pay comes out of county budget. And we also help the capital improvements and the equipment and all that. So the commission can influence that by supporting and encouraging certain directions. As far as how the current board has performed, I think a lot of especially some of the new members of the board, a lot of undue criticism has come on the past issues of the last few years because, you know, without being disrespectful to any previous school administration, they cleaned house. And current Board of Education, you know, Ms. Lisa Estep had the vision and foresight to recently resign so that a new chairwoman could come in and work with a new superintendent. I think that was very insightful on Ms. Estep's. So I think the commission can do a lot to help the school board, and I will do that.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Skip Watkins, candidate for New Hanover County's Board of Commissioners, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rachel. Take care of yourself.
When we come back from this break, we'll meet candidate Leslie Cohen. Stay with us. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, our focus is New Hanover County's Board of Commissioners. There are five board members who serve staggered four-year terms. This year, three seats are open. Only one incumbent is running for re-election. Today, we're meeting three of the six candidates. Leslie Cohen and her husband owned and ran a commercial graphics firm for 12 years, designing advertising for Fortune 500 companies. In 2002, Cohen says they transitioned their business to fine art. 7 years ago, the Cohens moved to Wilmington. And 3 years after that, the state legislature passed HB2, popularly known as the bathroom bill. This was the impetus for their political involvement. In 2018, Leslie Cohen ran for the state house, challenging incumbent Holly Grange. Cohen lost by about 5 points. New Hanover County's Board of Commissioners is her second bid for public office, and she joins me now. Leslie Cohen, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
The sale of New Hanover Regional Medical Center is not technically a done deal, but building the power structures and defining the terms of the agreement are underway. You say on your website that you support Save Our Hospital. What does your position mean at this stage of the game if you were to win a seat?
It's very hard to know exactly where we're going to be in December when the new board takes over. So my expectation is that the sale will be decided at that point. If it's not, then we're in a completely different situation and we don't really know what that will mean, what that situation is. But right now I'm very concerned about the setup of the foundation and how the money will be handled. It seems just innately wrong to me the way it was initially proposed, that Novant would appoint 6 of the 11 members to the foundation board, because that means that the group that bought the hospital has more say in how the funds are spent than the people of New Hanover County. And I'm not sure about the legality of that, but just innately, that doesn't feel right. It's as if I sold my house and then I'm going to tell, or the person that I sold it to is going to tell me how I can spend the money from, you know, what kind of house I can buy with the money you paid me to buy my house. That seems just wrong. So I'm very uncomfortable with that. And I'm also very uncomfortable with the idea behind that, because what they're trying to do is free up options for how that money can be invested, which on the face sounds good. But what that really means,
you're talking about tens of millions of dollars in return on investment.
We're talking about hundreds of millions, you know, $1.25 billion.
Right. But investing. I mean, the difference in return on investment,
exactly,
between how this is, you know, if this is structured where it has to be overseen by a local government commission versus a little more freedom. So
potentially, yes. But we're also looking at whether the level of risk for those investments. And if you think back to the 90s, when so many people lost their entire retirements because of risky investments. And we are in a point in history where there's going to be some tumultuous economic times coming up between everything that's happened in Washington over the last 4 years and COVID, and, you know, we're due for a downturn. Everything says the next 5 to 10 years are not going to be great times for Wall Street. And this is not a good time to put our money at risk. So, you know, inevitably, higher return means higher risk. And we need to be able to balance that. And we need oversight. And we also need oversight for the possibility of corruption. I'm sure that is not what anybody has in mind. I don't want to accuse anyone of anything, but we're talking about human beings and we're talking about a lot of money. And there is a lot of opportunity for that now and in the future. And I want to protect these funds because this really can be a great thing for our county in terms of the foundation and the funds. But we have to protect that. And I think we need to be very, very careful in how we move forward with it.
The Board of Education and the school district have seen a tumultuous few years with the resignations,
yes,
of superintendents, deputy superintendent, school district attorney, most recently the board chair stepping away. What is wrong with this school district? And how can a new Hanover County Commissioner influence this body?
Well, you know, a lot of the school board acts independently. So it's all about our relationships with them. And, you know, my understanding is even through the bad times, there has been a good working relationship between the county commission and the Board of Education. There is a lot of hard work ahead. There is a lot of repair that needs to be done. There is trust that needs to be earned. And I truly hope that the Board of Education is able to do that and get our school system back on the right track and protect our students. As a county commissioner, I will do whatever I can to support that mission and to support transparency. And that is a huge part of my message and my plans for county commission. And it is my hope that the Board of Education will embrace that too, because as terrible as the things that have happened to some of our students and the accusations that have been made, as horrible as all of those things are, the cover up and the loss of transparency and trust is the real crime, because we could fix the other problems. We can protect our students, but we can't do it unless we're honest and open about what's going on in our schools.
Where do you think that failure was?
I think that it is an entire environment of a culture of secrecy, and I think it was top down, and I think the resignations are a good thing. And I'm hopeful with the new people in place that things are going to get better, and time will tell. But it's just frustrating to watch, and there were failures at all levels. And go ahead.
You were saying that transparency is a big part of what you're campaigning on, your platform. What are some other ways that county business could be more open and transparent?
Right now, having the county commission meetings, having half of them at 4 p.m, is a real problem. My first move will be to ask that those be moved to 6 o'clock so that more people can be involved. Also, I think it was about a year ago, they canceled the agenda meetings. And that was in some twisted way supposed to be more transparent because those were not public meetings. But what it means is our commissioners are less informed and our county staff has less opportunity for input. So I want to reschedule those and televise them, because my understanding is it's literally a flip of a switch to put those up, at least on the web, so people can see exactly what's going on. I also will have an open door policy. It will be difficult in COVID, but as we are opening up more, I want to have town hall meetings and have more opportunities for the public to interact with the commission.
What is your view right now in 2020 of the partisan divide, which I think is arguably visible in local government? Are we now in an era when each major party's best strategy is just to get a majority to crush the other side? Is there any value for you in ideas coming from a commissioner with a different party affiliation?
I think we need a wide range of ideas and input. And when our democracy is healthy and working well, we have that. And we have not these extremes on either side. And I look forward to working across the aisle. I don't know what the makeup of the commission will be, obviously. But I also have every intention of working with Pender and Brunswick County commissions, and because we have to have a regional approach to our problems. So certainly I'm going to be working with people from across the aisle, and I'm going to be representing people who don't share my political ideology. And I welcome their input because I do represent them and I do want what's best with them. And I want them to feel heard and represented.
The city of Wilmington has approved the Rise Together initiative to foster equity, diversity, civic inclusion. What is the work that you believe this area, whether city or county, has to do on racial reconciliation?
Oh my goodness, we don't have time for this. This is such a huge, huge issue, and it's so important. And we are at such a critical point in the history of this country right now to address this. We are having conversations that I didn't expect that we would be able to have. The fact that the Confederate statues are coming down, we're having real conversations about police reform. We're having real conversations about reparations. We're having real conversations about systemic racism. And I'm excited by that. And I'm excited to be a part of that. And I don't know exactly what all of that work is going to look like, but it's an amazing thing that even the conversations are having, and it's time to follow that up with some action. And I want to be a part of that.
There is a pretty large sector of the population, white people, who think that this is getting out of hand. People are losing their minds. Cancel culture is taking over. What would you say to those folks who say when you take down the Confederate monuments or you change the name of a park like Hugh McCrae Park to Longleaf Park, you are trying to erase history?
Well, I didn't learn my history from statues or park names. I took classes, I read books, I go to museums, and I think there are places for that. And I think we need to put all of these things into context, because let's face it, most of these statues did not go up during the Civil War. They went up during Jim Crow, during Reconstruction, and there was a specific message that they were trying to send. And I think we need to put that into perspective. So I would completely support creating a museum. We could put it in Longleaf Park and have the history of racial relations and racial tension in New Hanover County and talk about who these people were, the good and the bad. Racism is not a person, it's an attitude. And each of these people had things that they contributed and ways in which they damaged our community. And I am completely open to looking at both sides of that.
Scientists tell us climate change is impacting the Cape Fear region, most obviously in the form of more frequent and more serious flooding from the Cape Fear River. Do you think local governments should be developing a plan for dealing with climate change? And if so, what should that plan look like?
I think we need those plans at every level of government. And I think working on ways that we as a county can lower our carbon footprint and lower our emissions, and also to draw green businesses to our area. We are in a great location for solar and wind power. We should be looking at these technologies as a way not only to decrease our carbon footprint, but to build our economy.
How satisfied are you with the state legislature's handling of the water quality issue 3 years after we learned about Gen X? Still in the water supply, what needs to happen?
We need to fully fund DEQ. We need to give them what they need. I have been screaming this since 2018. The legislature has given lip service to this, and very little has actually gotten done. And it's incredibly frustrating, and it's one of the reasons I was incredibly frustrated when the lines were redrawn and I could not run again for seat 20. But there's a lot of work to be done at the county level too.
And should CFPUA be more involved in some of this work than it has been?
I think CFPUA is doing everything that they can. It shouldn't be on CFPUA to pay for this and ultimately us. It should come from the polluters. We need to hold the polluters accountable, and we need to use every tool in the toolbox to do that.
You are listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Leslie Cohen, candidate for New Hanover County's Board of Commissioners, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back from the short break, we'll meet Dr. Kyle Horton. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews 2020. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, our focus is the new Hanover County Board of Commissioners. In this race, there are three open seats, most of the seats on the five-member board. Dr. Kyle Horton is one of six candidates, a medical doctor who earned her MBA and MD from Wright State University's Boonshoft School of Medicine. Dr. Horton completed her residency at Virginia Commonwealth University Medical Center in Richmond. She has taken her experience as an internal medicine physician from Hunter Holmes McGuire Veterans Affairs Medical Center to consult with and advocate for veterans and their clinicians, specifically on improving care for those veterans exposed to toxic substances. In 2018, she challenged Representative David Rauser for the seat in North Carolina's 7th Congressional District. She lost to the incumbent by almost 13 percentage points, but in New Hanover County, one of eight counties in the district, she beat Rauser by almost 5.5 points. She joins me now. Dr. Kyle Horton, welcome to Coastline.
Great to be here, Rachel.
The sale of New Hanover Regional Medical Center is not technically a done deal, but the negotiation, defining terms, setting up the governing bodies, that part is underway. And you've said quite vociferously, you oppose doing anything with the hospital until January of next year after the new board is seated. What's your ideal outcome? What would you do to protect public health, a component of your platform, if it goes through without you?
You know, if the deal goes through, my biggest concern has been that we know that as you create larger monopolies, that then costs of care can increase and that you can have adverse effects on the quality that can worsen disparities. And certainly in this pandemic, part of my concern has always been that this is the wrong time to lose local control. And when we don't know what the future of healthcare is going to look like. So going forward, what I would like to do is ensure that we really hold Novant's feet to the fire in this deal, that we ensure that however that foundation evolves, that we really protect accountability to all of us, because these are our healthcare dollars and our taxpayer dollars, that this is too big of an issue to be about one commissioner's pet projects or those who have voted for this. We have really got to ensure that we create a robust public health safety net, not just because of COVID, but because of these disparities and the increase in cost that's going to disproportionately harm most likely small businesses who will have to weather higher premiums for insurance and the like. So expect me to be fighting for that safety net and to make sure that we keep accountability in as much as we can going forward and looking at the governance structure and how we spend the money.
So if you were speaking directly to the commissioners now, are there elements of this deal that you would want to make sure that they define a certain way?
So, you know, right now, my big concern is that, you know, obviously we have not been let in on nuances of the strategic plan, and the legal language is still going to be coming and evolving. But right now, really, they're only holding Novant to really egregious violations. And there's a lot of flexibility. And what we know is that as you grow and, you know, create these large monopolies, that you don't get economies of scale, but actually what happens is you disenfranchise doctors and nurses, that you know, clinician to patient ratios increase, that they start scaling down the scope of certain services and outreach into the community because they're not a public, you know, hospital in the way that New Hanover has been investing in housing or you know, working with Habitat, for example, and the food banks for all of these things that are considered social determinants of health, but they're really policy and political determinants of health. And so what I'm looking for is better language and stronger language that really maintains this relationship in which our public officials, you know, have oversight into these appointments and can ensure that the money that's going forward is still going to be protecting our public health safety net.
And so does that mean that you would want the Community Foundation, which will be the body that oversees a very large pot of money, you would want that to be under the oversight of the local government commission? Is that what I'm hearing?
I believe that would be a better plan. And, you know, in my ideal world, I would love to see us go to more of a regional hospital authority model going forward. That the case that they laid out of not being able to meet capital needs in the other counties, I feel like could be better met with a different governance structure that wouldn't have necessarily required, you know, selling to someone like Novant. And I do think it would have been possible through an academic partnership to get a lot of those, you know, capital needs met. And so I do think that we should be looking to have more public accountability and not essentially have all of the members controlling these funds have to be confirmed by Novant.
The Board of Education and the New Hanover County School District has seen a pretty tumultuous few years with the resignations of the superintendent, deputy superintendent, school district attorney. Most recently, the board chair stepped away. What is happening with this district, and what could you do? What kind of influence could you hold over the school board, if any?
You know, I think this is really the question of the day in a lot of ways. And as we're looking at moving towards Plan B, there are certainly implications to public health there that I'm looking at. And What I think we need to do is to sort of refine the relationship between the school board and the county commission, that as the funding entity on the county commission, I think we need to put back sort of a set of budget development meetings that are public and available, so that sort of the power of the purse that we have as county commissioners ends up being more of an oversight role than what it has been in the past. Because I think, you know, our funding structure, if we look at, we're roughly sixth in wealth in terms of ranking the counties in North Carolina, but we're somewhere around 20th for funding our public schools. That's not good enough for our kids. And certainly when we're in this tumultuous time of crisis, I think the more integrated leadership we have between the county commissioners as the, you know, ultimate funding source, the better.
You know, we've heard from elected officials over the years that holding public office is never what they imagined it would be, even at the local level, having to answer emails all the time, getting angry phone calls in the middle of the night, blow back negativity. I've heard from one elected official, he's had to deal with death threats. Why do you want to hold office when at this point politics is just, it's so divisive and angry?
It is so divisive and angry, but, you know, I'm someone, you know, I became a doctor, not because it's easy, but because I wanted to help people. And at the times when things are the darkest is when I really want to be there for people and step up. And I think a good example is my work on veteran suicide, that, you know, that was sort of one of the darkest moments for me as a clinician, was nearly losing patients in between when I saw them and they got integrated into mental health. And I wanted then, you know, with all my heart to make a difference on that issue, even though it was so difficult. And it was divisive even on the Hill because people just didn't want to talk about it. And so I think in this time, we need that kind of caring and responsive leadership to tackle these really difficult issues and to really try to bring people together in whatever way is possible. But I'm really excited to serve because of the tremendous challenges and the changes in accountability and transparency, where I think my particular kind of leadership with listening and caring and taking action in the way that I have, even providing PPE to the community during this crisis through Cape Fear OSMS, that kind of proactive to get things done that are needed to keep our community safe is what I think we need to bring people together.
What do you mean by transparency and accountability? Is that part of your plan, is to increase those two things? How would you do it?
What my concerns have been is, one, we were all blindsided, obviously, with the hospital deal. And, you know, canceling the agenda meetings as far as the, you know, county commission goes, those agenda meetings are vital for us as community members and televised agenda meetings to really know, you know, what's coming forward. Throughout this hospital deal, including, you know, with the last vote on the letter of intent, most of us in the community believed that they were just going to be bringing forth the idea of advancing the Novant deal, that they were not going to have, you know, sort of the final draft language of the letter of intent to vote on at that meeting. You know, those kinds of breaches in transparency, you know, really can't continue. People are concerned that this is just about backroom deals and, you know, that it's not being done in plain view, and the strategic plan not being, you know, publicly available is, I think, a part of that mistrust. And so what I want to do is put back those agenda meetings, move the meeting times to more convenient evening hours, which, you know, wouldn't have helped me much as a doctor, but at least for those who work more normal 9-to-5 schedules, they could actually get to the meetings and really ensure that when we're developing the Unified Development Ordinance and things like that, there is more opportunity for public input and not less. And that's what I mean about accountability and transparency.
It's more than 3 years now since we've learned about Gen X in the water supply, and that was just the tip of the iceberg. As we've discovered, there are all kinds of unregulated, potentially toxic compounds in our drinking water supply. At what point are institutions going to stop passing the buck in terms of of making sure the water supply is safe to drink and people don't have to have reverse osmosis systems in their homes to have safe drinking water. Is there anything that can be done at the county level?
You know, there are some things that I think can be done at the county level. And a lot of it has to do with helping to inform us on the environmental health side and engaging, you know, public health experts into this conversation. And also on the consumer education side, so that as we're making decisions in purchasing at the county level, and then as individuals, when we're, you know, getting out there, we know what products contain PFAS and are actually going to increase our exposure. And that kind of education has never really been done. And I'm really looking to hopefully start that conversation, to work with the state officials to start towards PFAS-free purchasing, so that we're not putting in, you know, carpets that are Scotchgard and contain PFAS. And then we really need to be working in concert with DEQ as aggressively as possible to be protected in that consent order. And so, you know, leaders like Senator Harper Peterson or Representative Deb Butler, we need to be working county to state to really ensure that we're both getting through DEQ what we need, and hopefully through legislation at the state level that starts to protect us with, you know, the kinds of infrastructure and actual holding feet to the fire and forcing polluters to pay.
There was a recent change of a county park name from Humacrae to Longleaf Park. It was a divided vote. The statue of George Davis, Attorney General for the Confederacy, has come down for public safety concerns. There are people who think that this is cancel culture run amok, trying to erase history. How do you see this issue? And what do you think the work of the county is at this point?
You know, we're at a flashpoint in our country. And, you know, the pain of our original sin of slavery is very real for people. And we know that, you know, across generations that systemic and structural racism has really been the case in this country. It's a norm, and it's influenced and propped up by policy, like those things that I was talking about, of social determinants of health that are really political and policy determinants of health, is that a lot of these, you know, structural, you know, racism policies are evoking even Jim Crow and attempts at taking away people's votes. These are all issues that are sort of reflected and emblematic in these names of, you know, previous leaders of the coup and in, you know, Confederate soldiers. And so we need to stop kind of marginalizing this conversation and making it just about statues, and really have a real conversation about what it is in terms of, you know, structural and institutionalized racism. So, you know, you can expect me as county commissioner to really look at, you know, diversity and inclusion and equity from the perspective of public health and addressing maternal mortality for African-American women that's been three times higher in this country, and to really take the conversation just away from symbols to really having a hard look at ourselves and this country and what we have chosen to do in propping up structural racism over generations.
Okay, very briefly, we're running out of time, but climate change is impacting the Cape Fear region. We see it in the form of more frequent and serious flooding on the Cape Fear River. What do local governments need to do about this, if anything?
You know, I'd love to see us really go forward with a robust clean energy plan. And you know that I have a personal connection to the loss of life with the Deepwater Horizon. And so, you know, I've seen reckless energy policy. Make sure and that, you know, we address stormwater and the way we move forward and the utility to keep us safe. And we really need to look at innovative ways to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels and develop a robust clean energy plan.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Dr. Kyle Horton, Democratic candidate for New Hanover County's Board of Commissioners, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks also to Republican candidate Skip Watkins and Democratic candidate Leslie Cohen. One-stop voting begins October 15th. Coastline's producer is Rachel Keith. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.